Mr. Jewel Love, welcome to the show.
And I'm so glad to be here. Let's do it.
All right. Finally making this happen. It's been a long time. Before we start and jump into the deep end, could you just say a little bit more about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am the CEO and founder of Black Executive Men. We have a platform to help brothers win in their career, in their personal life, through one-on-one coaching. But we also have community support. We have an open free community. We also have a paid premium elite community, giving you guys access to some of the best managerial leadership and resources on the market. So that's what we're up to.
So let's talk about the Jewel Love origin story. So where are you from? Where did you think you were going to be as an adult? Tell me the whole story.
I don't know if I've ever been sat on a podcast, so this is good. I got my answer. So family background, mixed in terms of where my mom and dad are from. My mom's actually from Canada, Scottish Canadian, and she came here at a young age. Dad, African American, came from Chicago. They met. But there's me and my twin sister, grew up running in the San Francisco Bay Area. And actually, side note, we were raised, religiously, we were raised Buddhist. And then when I went to college, I started learning about Black studies and really like in-depth about history of slavery. But not just that, just learned a lot of Black figures and politics and culture. And for me, it was incredible. Like, first off, I went to UC Santa Barbara. So it was like, if you know, I know there's people all over the world listening, but let me tell you, it's a very beautiful place. Like, it's beach, just like palm trees. It's incredibly beautiful. And I'm getting to study Black studies. So it's like that intellectual, cultural stimulation is happening. So a really great combination experience. Met some of my best friends there as well. Graduated. And then why I brought up a Buddhism piece earlier is because I started studying different spiritual traditions, religions, and just a little getting curious about what's outside of my known bubble. And I stumbled across psychology and psychotherapy, and how I found that even from like maybe a spiritual but a personal development perspective, is realizing there's things that I can do, shifts I can make inside, just, you know, kind of in my own mind and in psyche, if you will, that impacted the quality of life I had outside. First says, relationships, telkens, if this is mental quality, and I fell in love with it and decided to become a therapist, and then started Black Executive Men about 8 years ago, and the rest is history. In terms of, I wanted to be a policeman and a lawyer. When I go, those are my bills too.
So I want to dive into a couple of these things that you mentioned. And one, you made that bridge from psychology and Buddhism. Was there a Buddhist community around you, or was there like a Buddhist temple that you belonged to? Like, how Buddhist were you? Like, what was that experience like?
You know, so. We went to community centers all the time. Like, we were fully immersed into the Buddhist community. And it was great. It was very supportive. People were very kind. And it was just a very positive space to be a part of. I think the reason why I decided to, you know, just kind of blow my own search is because I made friends with people that weren't Buddhist, and I saw that, you know, their lives were, in many, you know, many cases, were going great as well. So I was like, oh, there's other philosophy, like, ways to go about, sounds kind of weird, but life. There's other ways to kind of, you know, there's other spiritual philosophies that give good results, is what I want. This isn't the only type of religion or philosophy that leads to a good life. And so for me, that was just fascinating. That's all I know. And that's kind of what I thought was like the end all be all. But then it just took the, you know, the lid off of that. And I said, you know what? I want to find something for me that really speaks just very uniquely to my experience and kind of what I'm searching for. I'm just the leader of Agape in Los Angeles. When I lived in Los Angeles, I went to their spiritual center like 3 times or something like that, just to chat it out. And there was one thing he said that stuck, and it was that seekers farm. And I thought that was pretty profound because I considered myself a seeker and was able to kind of on my own find certain communities and philosophies and kind of cobble together something that works for me now. I'm not religious these days. I'm not even that spiritual these days, per se.
Were there things that you were learning in psychology, you know, and in school and after that you were like, oh, this is similar to what I was learning when I was younger? Did you make that connection directly through your education and your upbringing?
Yeah, so in techies, what some of those connections were, because there's definitely a lot. There's something about a belief in humanity, just that kind of human layer of knowledge in the Buddhist community I grew up in, and it was stressed a lot just about humanity and like having a transformational experience as well. Because there's, you know, a lot of lineages to Buddhism, but we maybe go back to Siddhartha Buddha directly. Really talking about having this enlightenment actual, you know, experience and it being through meditation, as far as I understand it. And so even though there have been different kind of variations, derivations of Buddhism that have spread throughout the world, I think that's probably really stayed in the majority of them, is having that enlightenment type of experience. And so for me, even though I wasn't necessarily so much focused on a spiritual, whatever that result experience is, I always kept in mind around personal transformation and having a destiny of some sort. And so I think for me, that was what I learned along the way. Around destiny, and then like learning about like ancestors, about people having a unique mission in life to carry out. So some of those pieces related back to the
one of the things that I've, because in my, you know, exposure or experience with Buddhism, and I grew up, you know, non-religious, but I went to a Quaker school for grade school, and you know, my grandmother was Presbyterian, and then I went to a Catholic school. You know, a lot of my friends and neighbors were Jewish. So, like, I just kind of was in this religion gumbo, like, just exposure to all these different things. But I hadn't been exposed a lot until to Buddhism and Buddhist practices until after college. And then one of the things that really stood out to me is the non-attachment. And that, to me, well, that bridges with that concept with psychology and like how the mind works and what it's doing and grasping and looking for answers. It's become such a helpful tool in a lot of ways in dealing with life in general and your expectations and wanting to win and wanting to succeed and, you know, your attachment to these future goals or even attachment to the things that you used to do. I mean, there's so much there. So yeah, I'm really happy that we talked about that. It's not something I was aware of. Huh, interesting. So, okay, I want to talk about what you're currently doing and some of the journeys that you've been doing as an entrepreneur. Can you walk me through, you know, kind of the genesis and the thinking from and starting the organization that you run?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I guess there's a little bit of history there as well. So, growing up with my dad, was in the club. And so even as a kid, I was going to AA meetings, you know, keep coming back because it works. If you're working, you're working, still work. Like that whole culture and a lot of coffee drinking and cigarette smoke, like 5 years old. I was in there sitting in meetings, like dangling my legs back and like not having a clue really what was going on. Just that I was in another meeting. And with my mom, we went to a lot of Buddhist meetings. So meetings were just, you just went on meeting with your parents. And my dad was also a business owner. And he was really, what later, I guess, would learn to be called impactor So he had impact-driven businesses that focused on the Black community, uplift and inspiration and things like that, but, you know, for-profit entity. And one of the things he would do was have a nightclub. Now, these were clean and sober nightclubs. So the money was made at the door, essentially. And people from the clean and sober community would still come in and have fun and party and dance, mix and mingle. But there's no alcohol or drugs present. So that, even in that, I would be there as a kid, not a kid, more as a, well, maybe as a kid, but definitely as a teen, serving sodas or hot dogs or whatever we were giving to the people there. So in my mind, having impact-driven Black community-focused businesses was just normal. It was just what you did. Like, that was business. It was synonymous, one and the same for me. So I'm so happy to be a businessman today. And I always figured out, you know, probably have a Black-focused business, Black community-focused business in the future. And I just didn't know what it was going to be. God. So skipping forward, Black executive men, after I got my license in psychotherapy, even before I got my license, still an intern, and I started Black executive men. But I didn't know which segment of the Black men's community I wanted to focus on. So there was clients I was seeing that were fresh out of prison. There was teens that were going through a lot of intense stuff, like with their parents. And then there was the corporate.
So, and doing this and starting something new, and, you know, like you mentioned, you didn't know exactly what it is or how it worked, but you knew there was something there. Can you talk about some of the obstacles and the challenges and the things that you learned through that process?
Yeah, absolutely. So, so much. The first piece is about corporate itself. I was not familiar with corporate. I knew therapy, tears, tissue, and trauma. So while people were, while my clients were telling me about their anxiety, depression, you name it, they were also telling me about, like, corporate terminology, like first quarter, second quarter, C-suite, board members, market penetration, stock price. Like, I didn't know any of this stuff. Skip level manager, just the corporate terminology. And so while I was writing down their symptoms and, let's say treatment plans, I was writing down corporate terms. And then when they would leave, I would go Google them. Like, what does this even mean? So for 6 years, I really had a master class of working with brothers in corporate one-on-one and learning about corporate America from their perspective. So for me, that was just a very sharp learning curve. I think the other, probably most amazing thing that I got to experience was this kind of hidden class of Black men in corporate America. How I grew up, very, good upbringing, but very humble, economically. Like, my uncle was not the VP at Google. Like, I didn't have that direct access. And these guys are some of the most, morally upright, financially successful, family focused, frankly, team workers, excellent communicator. Like, they have so many amazing qualities. And yet, in the larger Black community, the narrative of these guys isn't as well known as some of the other niche demographics of Black men. So for me, this was like finding the heroes of the Black community. And I just saw a goldmine opportunity in terms of social impact to highlight these men and show them to the world, because they're incredible. And the world doesn't really know so much unless you're in this community. And that's kind of all you know. If you're outside, you might not even know this community exists. And so for me, it was just finding an absolute goldmine in terms of in terms of community. So those were some of the pieces.
You know, I love that. And that's one of the things that part of the reason for the especially the origin of this podcast was that with the BCREN, with the Black Commercial Real Estate Network, I started meeting people and being exposed to people, not only, Black professionals, but, many that I was like, who are, like, how come I have never seen you before? Like, how come I've never heard your story? And then, like, how did you get here? Like, what did you do? Where did you zig? When did you zag? So that was a big part of me starting this podcast, because I've become so exposed to these wonderful people, wonderfully, you know, successful, but, you know, inspiring people, you know, present company included. And it's like, I want to show you, I want to learn more, and I want to show these people to the world, you know. But, and again, it's not only the Black community, but there's so much out there in the Black community that I think is not, the world doesn't see all the time. And maybe it's because, you know, a lot of our athletes or, you know, musicians, but there's another side of this too. And that's, I think you're doing great work with everything that you're doing. And I have an additional question for you about some of the things that you've working one-on-one with some of these Black professionals. Are there any themes that surprise you that you've seen? Like, one, it's pretty cool to hear the joy when you're speaking of, like, how impressive some of your clients and partners are. But is there anything that you're like, oh, this is a common theme that I'm seeing, like, or this is a trauma that they have? Like, is there anything that stands out?
So, the surprising thing, I would say, and, you know, there's definitely different levels. Guys that are more early career, there's guys that are different here. So I'd say just how successful could be some of the guys are. But in terms of, because I wasn't exposed to that growing up, so that's just impressive. But in terms of, I say, core issues and struggles, many of them, not all, but many are the first generation. So it's kind of like, I just felt like they were born driven. Because they may have had the same education as, let's say, their siblings, but they excel. And they ended up going rest, you know, maybe undergrad, maybe grad school, like top colleges, you name it, and doing really well in the world, or maybe nonprofit or something like that. So I would say that can be a struggle as well, of being the only. So the only in their family. So not having maybe perhaps like siblings or family members that maybe didn't go to college or, you know, did not go to grad school, something like that, and not made $200,000, $500,000, $1 million, something like that. And then feel both responsible for their family members, but it can creep into the boundaries aren't set in a healthy way, a level of resentment for kind of being the family kind of go-to when they didn't, you know, necessarily sign up to hold that role financially or responsibility-wise, and it can lead them to feeling isolated. I think another piece is feeling isolated at work, being one of the only Black men in a workplace that might be majority white or Indian or just non-Black, and wanting support on how to advance, and it not just being the skill set on how to do the role, but there's a cultural lens and layer as well, because you know, in days, and it's culturally how to navigate corporate environments where that corporate culture, A, may not be their kind of first initial culture that they grew up with. They kind of had to learn it along the way, and there could be different rules and definitely different perceptions of Black men that can, you know, work favorably or unfavorably, you name it. And so for us, it's really for my clients, it's really important to learn how to navigate the cultural aspects of how to advance in a corporate world that may not be able to provide that feedback. For instance, if your boss or colleagues are not Black or not even so familiar with a Black cultural experience, it may be hard for them to give that type of coaching on how this man should move in order to advance in the workplace. So that's typically where they have to go to a third party and get that kind of support and cultural feedback on how to succeed. So that's going to be a common challenge, a common experience, I'd say, is as well. I think the other thing, maybe the last thing here that comes to mind is, just like everybody else, white, Black, you know, Asian, you know, Latino, a Jewish, you name it, just the trials, tribulations, and traumas that come along with just being a human being, challenging experiences with parents growing up, traumas of all kind of, you know, physical, emotional, sexual, abuse, the things that happen in all communities are going on with this community as well. So even though they may be super polished on the surface, there may be some underlying trauma from childhood that's there for them, and they'll, you know, say, go to therapy for it and need to heal.
Yeah, that's a good point. We all have our challenges. We all need to heal. Like, find a way, whether it's community, therapy, music, any, by all means possible, got to find a way to heal.
I kind of like a black, like a Malcolm X, like by any means possible, heal. I think that in that category.
One of the things that it stands out to me that, you know, with everything that's going on in like the news and in business, and, you know, I work in commercial real estate, which hasn't been doing that well recently as of date of this, this podcast recording, depending on when you're listening to this, you know, and then it's always a challenge. Like, there's always a challenge, and whether it's like your personal life, your business, the health of a family member, your community, something, there's always a challenge. And I know, and it feels like, you know, in many ways that you could be like, oh, when are things just going to be stable? Like, when are things just going to be like fine? But the truth is, like, even when there's some, you know, semblance of fine and stable, it never is. And yeah, there's always going to be another challenge, and there's always going to be something else. So it's like, find that healing, find those methods of being the best person you can be, and find the methods to get over any obstacles or challenges, because they're going to come again. I think there's a, I don't know where the phrase I heard it from, but it's over the mountains, there's other mountains. You know, like, you're going to go through something else again. Somebody's going to get sick. Somebody's going to get hurt. Over somebody's going to lose a job. It all happens. So find a way. So
yeah,
another question I have, like, for you and what you're doing, like, what's next? Like, what are you excited about? What are you seeing on the horizon? You know, what's Jewel Love excited about?
Yeah, you know, to build out our community and have thousands of others involved, of course, in our open community, but also in the LEAP membership program. We're going to be putting a lot more attention toward that after we stabilize the them community. But really, it's just about getting more structures for guys to hop over into. Because in the elite, we're actually reaching out to guys that are C-level, Fortune 500 black men, VPs as well, and also retired, probably VPs and CL guys as well, and making relationships with them, connecting with them, letting them know what we're about to. Hey, there's an opportunity to come speak to mid-level black men and help them to advance their careers. 1 hour, a year, that, you know, it's your investment, and you're going to be touching so many lives, hundreds, maybe in the future, thousands. And so it's building relationships with those guys at the top and then connecting them with the guys that are at the middle place. You know, it's on a group scale, it's kind of mentorship, might even lean into a sponsorship, depending on if some one-on-one connections can be made. And really building this internal community pipeline to make sure that our guys have the support they need to maximize their career, at least on the W-2 side of the equation. So we're just excited to have that solution kind of at the core of what I'm passionate about. It is about healing. And right now, that system is disjointed and those parties are disconnected. And one of the biggest pieces of feedback that I hear is black men in senior leadership are unavailable, they're gatekeepers, they're trying to be the only one there. But I hear a lot of stuff. And I think there's an opportunity to show so many mid-level guys they want to help, but they're very busy and they have a lot on their plate. And there's a lot of even racial pressures and dynamics that guys at mid-level, they haven't been exposed to yet. They're not aware of yet. And so they don't have the full picture of what's going on. And you got guys at the top that can just give them the education, give them the game, if you will. So for us, in terms of a community, I do look at even as healing work to bridge that gap. So yes, there's the structure, but I'm also excited to see what potential gets unlocked due to having that structure in place. I don't know what will come, but I'm almost certain it'd be something positive and something good. So we're excited about that. I'm also excited about getting the golf tournament, like running on, you know, a nicer golf course and just having our guys get together and be able to ball it over maybe a weekend tournament and have that experience and get photos and the video and just have that imagery out there for the Black community, but for the world to see us fraternizing together and enjoying one another's company and just saying, hey guys, it can just be peaceful. It can just be collaborative amongst ourselves in our community. And you can do it too.
You had me at golf. Got me in. Got me in. So like, let me ask you, could you touch on... Yeah, and you know, maybe we can do something together with the Black Commercial Real Estate Network, because I think that there's a lot of golfers in our community as well. You touched on something that I think is really interesting that I would love to hear you talk a little more on. You know, because you know some Black executives are at this level and are used to being the only one. Do you see that when you get together, if they get together, like a crabs in the barrel type mentality, is that something that you're talking about healing, like that they are combative in a way? Or?
So
maybe not combative. I'm not picking the right word here. Combative is not the right word, but there's something there to heal.
Well, that's a good word. Good word. Yeah. I mean, the reality is there's limited spaces at the top, right? If you want to go back to the NBA, there's only 340 or something like that slots. That's it. There's not more. That's it. And the guys that are going for the top spot, they're very competitive, and you have to be. That spot, unless you were uber well connected, that's not going to be just given to you, especially for a lot of Black men that don't have those kind of grandfathered in networks maybe to play on or to lean on. So yeah, it's going to be a sense of, there is going to be a competitiveness, but at the same time, the guys that are on those levels, they got WhatsApp groups, they got conferences that they go to, and they support each other. And they share best practices with each other because they're not in direct competition. They might be, let's say, at a different company. So it's really about, hey, I'm the only Black man in C-suite, or maybe even in senior leadership at my company. You are too. Man, let's get together and talk about the challenges and laugh it off. Or maybe even, you know, like, I don't know, rather maybe shed a tear or two. I don't know, but have that space to be open and authentic about their experiences. So there's a lot of camaraderie on those levels of leadership, but it is private. It's like there's so many firewalls that it's behind. The general public has no idea that these meetings are even happening and taking place. But there's a bit of both. I will say this, and I like to add, because I posted about it and people have found it helpful to clarify a dynamic, which is, so who, you know, anybody of any background listening to this right now, being Black man in a Fortune 500 company, and let's say even you're a VP, right? And then let's say you need to bring on some people. Let's just even say 5 people and direct reports. You got enough people interviewing for it. Now, a lot of people, and let's say that man hires 4 out of 5 are Black people. Not even men, right? Just Black men, Black women. So you got to think, how is that going to look to anybody at the company, let alone their peers, other VPs, in anyone in the C-suite? Is it possible it's going to look like favoritism? Is that a possibility? I'm here to tell you it is a possibility of how that man may be cute. So let's take it a step further, because these are the experiences these guys are having. So let's say they're interviewing, right? And it turns out that those 4 Black individuals are the most suited for the role. most qualified for the role. Let's say it just shakes out that way. But there's the perception, possibly, that if he stay with me, but I know you guys know exactly what I'm going with it. If he hires those four, it could make him from his peer superiors and others look biased toward his own people racially or ethnically. So he knows this. Absolutely knows this. And he's thinking about his own career as well. But he wants to give back and uplift, and let's just say in this situation, give the best, most qualified people the role. But now you see the dilemma that he's in at that moment. Whereas, perhaps, some of his non-Black colleagues, if they were to hire, let's say two, let's say three, even if four Black staff, he may or she may get a pat on the back, possibly, for caring for others, uplifting and supporting outside of their community. So you see how this oddly double standard exists or can exist in the corporate world, where this guy or gal could be seen as doing something great at uplifting diversity or whatever we want to call it, whereas this gentleman here, who's a Black man, could be looked at as side-eye, preferential treatment, bias, discrimination, you name it. So, folks who are listening, this is one example out of tens or hundreds of consciously and are.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's very insightful, too. Challenges, you know, dynamics.
Challenges.
It's to put it mildly. Okay, so I want to make sure that I'm going to be respectful of your time. I know we're coming up right now on our time, but I had to ask you. I could not let you leave without, because I know listeners are going to want to know your name, Jewel Love. Is there an origin story for your name? Is there anything? And what is your middle name also?
Yeah, absolutely. So my middle name is Edward, and I'm actually in Mexico now. So in Mexico, it's hard to pronounce Jewel. The J is tough. It becomes like, hey, well, so something like that. So, they just call me, you know, either Edward or Eduardo or Lalo here in Mexico. But that's my middle name. I'm a junior. So my dad is Jewel Love Senior, and he got the name from his grandmother. And I don't know the origin story behind that. Very unique name for a Black man from the South. When my dad was great-grandmother, he picked her great name on, you know, a selection for that name for him. So I'm a junior, so my dad, he passed it.
What's your sister's name?
So her name is Geralina, and that's a mixture of my grandparents on a grandmother. And so it's just like Geralina. So that's how she got. Okay.
Awesome. I mean, because I just had to ask, because I know Jewel Love, people are going to want to know. So anyone who's not already familiar with your work.
You know, it's so wild.
Hey, listen,
for me,
thank you so much for your time. Not only for your time today, you know, but just, for everything you're doing like with Edward your work Jones. And in the community. Really appreciate it, and I appreciate you spending this time with me. All right. Jewel Love, everybody.